interrupter T.O. Hardiman, Chicago newsroom host Ken Davis, and comedian and commentator Aaron Freeman. And now here's your host, a man who is still trying to figure out when to celebrate, Justin Kaufman.
Now? We celebrate now? Oh, wait. Now. It's awesome that it all happens on Friday night, too. It's just so fun for Wrigleyville, for Cubs fans, for, I would say, two-thirds of Chicago. It's a lot of fun. Right? For Sox fans right now, they're like, ah, oh, come on. And today I was at a food court in the Merchandise Mart at the Billy Goat of all places. And the guy, I had a White Sox hat on, right? Because as you know in this show that I'm a White Sox fan, and I'm also a Cubs fan in the way that I love Chicago. I'm not one of those diehard guys who can't stand one team or feels that you have to be absolute. I'm not absolute in anything. You know, I'm happy for the Cubs, and I'm glad that the Cubs are winning. It's awesome to watch. And this team is so fun to root on because they're not of, like, Cub teams of the past. There's no Carlos Zambrano on this team. Let me just put it that way, right?
Yeah, I'm very impressed with your knowledge of the Cubs because I really know nothing about the Sox.
Well, the guy says to me, I get the hot hamburger, and he goes, "Hey, your team sucks." And I was like, "What? What do you mean?" I didn't. he was kind of a broken English, so it was like I didn't know if he meant either me, the order that I had ordered, like the hamburger,
bad order.
Because I had not thought about that. I had my hat on that said Sox, and I said, "Excuse me." He's like, "Your team." And then like right away, Pete, like in a way I got like stand up. I went right away. Like my brain got into like quick comebacks.
2005, man.
Yeah. I go, "Well, you know what? I seem to remember a ticker tape parade on LaSalle." Huh? Am I right, everybody? Nobody cares. And like all the tech people are like, "What's baseball? What's his team? Is the San Francisco Giants playing?" But yeah. So I just felt. Today was a weird day. And I will say this as well. Like, you know, as a Sox fan, like, it could have been great. I think that's what really gets us this year is that it started so well. It started in a way where the first 20, 25 games, the Sox had the best record in baseball, better than the Cubs.
Yeah.
There was this thought that if you think right now, Pete, this could be it. We could be in a situation where tonight the White Sox are clinching. You know, and the Cubs were like yesterday and yesterday, and it just feels like that could have been something special. And I'm more disappointed in my team because they didn't finish what they started.
Mm-hmm.
So as a Sox fan, I'm not that confident or, you know, boastful or even arrogant when it comes to my team's the best because they're not the best. They let the terrible Indians and the crappy Tigers bounce them out, the Royals of all teams. And so it's just sort of at a certain point, you put your hands up in the air and you say, well, you know what? They don't deserve to be where they're at. And so that's where we're at.
What possesses a person to do? I mean, I'm a Cubs fan and I love the Cubs. I don't really like the Sox, but I would never go up to a Sox fan and say, your team sucks, ever.
I think once I push back a little bit, you could see he had like a little wink. Give me a little wink, a little man wink.
Joshing, yeah.
Hey, it's just joshing.
Yeah.
Lunchtime Josh at the Merchandise Mart food court. Hey, just joshing with you. You know, just what you want you've been defeated by lunch. You've been defeated where you're like, I guess I'll go to the food court version of the Billy Goat for a burger. That's when lunch defeated you because the lines were long at the other places that you really wanted to go to. Then you go there and not only are you defeated, but then the guy who's cooking the burger takes time out of cooking that burger to tell you that your professional baseball team that you find allegiance to sucks. It's kind of great. Only in Chicago. No, probably everywhere, but only in Chicago, right? This is a download here on 720 WGN Chicago. I'm Justin Kaufman. We got a great show lined up tonight. Aaron Freeman, longtime great stand-up comedian and Second City star, is going to be here along with Ken Davis from the Chicago Newsroom to break down the week that was, our week in review. 312-981-7200, the number to call in or text to play along and be a part of the segment tonight. Also coming up in the 7:30 hour here, T.O. Hardiman's going to join us. We'll talk about violence and what can be done to stop it here in the city of Chicago. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier. Production provided by my man Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a break. We'll come back with Carryout. Stay with us. All right, so download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, let's kick the show off tonight with the Carryout. This, of course, nightly segment where I read the news, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Donald Trump really stuck it to the media today by holding a press conference in his new Washington, D.C. hotel. He wanted to tell the world that President Obama was indeed a U.S. citizen. Okay. The media showed up, and he ended up being 90 minutes late. Then he took the opportunity to just talk about his new awesome hotel. And at the end of the 45-minute conference, he said Obama was a citizen. No questions, but hey, who wants a tour? The media was not happy, but then again, that may have been the point. And after all that, the makeshift stage that Trump did the press conference on collapsed. Either that's an ominous sign about the campaign or the hotel. Either one, hilarious, right? If that was accidentally funny, then this was deliberately funny. Clinton had the line of the week. The good news is my pneumonia finally got some Republicans interested in women's health. Oh, boom, mic drop. Then she started talking about periods and everybody spaced out. Back to the birther stuff. Trump did go out of his way to blame the birther movement roots on Hillary, as she allegedly asked questions about Obama when campaigning against him in 2008. The media, surprisingly, went out of their way to call out Trump as a liar. When reached for comment, Trump was like, no, they didn't. Nope. They said I'm the best and I was right and I'm the best and I have the best hotel in D.C. Want to take a tour? Who wants to take a tour? Nobody wants to take a tour, dude. Chill. In other news, the iPhone 7 was released today, and it is so expensive. That's all. That's all I got. Private sources close to the mayor of Chicago say he's going to make a big policy speech on violence and point the finger at absentee fathers. This is a controversial move for a mayor who's not popular in the black community, but he reportedly believes this is one of the big issues in why there are so many gangbangers and gun violence. Some critics will say that it's not absentee fathers, it's that many fathers are incarcerated or have been killed due to gun violence. Both issues can be traced back to politics and policy. Eek. Look for that soon, maybe next week. Representative Ron Sandak abruptly resigned this summer, and now it comes out that he was being extorted by an international crime ring that posed as a woman on social media. They shook him down for money, saying if he didn't pay, they would release his inappropriate conversation and media. This ring supposedly originated in the Philippines. Wait, didn't Mike Madigan just go to the Philippines? Oh, he didn't? Oh, you, never mind. Scratch that. Nope. Sorry. Scratch that theory. Sorry. He didn't. No. In weather, hey, Harvest Moon, which sounds more like a Neil Young song and less like astronomy. On this harvest moon. That's what you have to play when you look up at the moon tonight. On this harvest moon. In sports, last night the Cubs lost, but they won a division later. And today they brought out the B squad to win in dramatic fashion with a walk-off and extra innings to get the real party started. I believe they're still on the field, and my guess is that Harry Carey and Ron Santo are doing Jaeger bombs in the sky. More in reality, John Cusack and Jim Belushi are doing Jaeger bombs at Sluggers. One small issue, though, Jorge Soler, why was he in the game? I'm not sure. He left with tightness in the fourth. Wait, I thought tightness was a good thing. Get tight. Give me some tightness. So now what? The Cubs will get some rest for the starters and keep a deep rotation to take pressure off the big dogs. I mean, they have 2.5 weeks left of the regular season, so get ready for a lot of Matt Caesar and Trevor Cahill. Hope you got tickets. NBC's reporting a catcher, David Ross, the pit boss, he went out last night and partied in Wrigleyville, but nobody recognized him. A bartender did, but not many others. That's got to feel good for the old-timer, getting thrown up on by a Wrigleyville douche while someone's going, hey, old man, sorry about your flannel. Wait, you kind of look familiar. Are you in Pearl Jam? What's up? What's up? What's up? Not a great way to celebrate the career there, Grandpa. Speaking of being recognized, Cubs president Theo Epstein put on a fake mustache and sat in the bleachers today. That's awesome. Points, dude, points. Best team ever. The Sox, not the best team ever, start a series with the Royals. Chris Sale goes tonight. Unfortunately, really the only reason to watch right now, so I just DVR every fifth game or so. Although, he's had a rocky second half. I think he's got one win in the second half. Come on. In football, if Jeremy Langford doesn't work out, the Bears should look at this running back on the Jets. 100 yards, 3 touchdowns yesterday. Fort, Matt Fort, he's great. Might be a steal.
The Bears play on Monday night this week. The injury report looking good. Kyle Fuller is the only limited player coming off knee surgery. He didn't play in week one. Not sure if he's going to suit up for week two. If he doesn't go, they should see if Donnell Wolford's still in shape, right? I don't know. Wolford. I like that guy. Cutler talked to the media today, and a weird question came up about why he doesn't do more endorsements, especially local. His answer is that he wants to protect his free time. Ah, really? Yeah, the Kane-Taves Chevy commercial? Yeah, that took him months to make. My guess is it took 15 minutes of them going, get a Chevy, to cut that spot, right? My other guess? Nobody's asking. If I were Cutler, I'd be the spokesperson for Camel Cigarettes. Just go there. Smoking Jay. And finally tonight, an Australian daughter has sued her parents for putting her baby photos on Facebook. She said it caused embarrassment and emotional harm. Baby pictures. When reached for comment, the parents were like, nah, what's your number? We'll just text them to you. That's my Australian accent. That's not a knife. There it is. I got it. That's the carryout for September 16th, 2016. Hey, it's the weekend, so you know what you got to do. You got to carry out. And you know what? A special we got running for the Cubs? Well, no special. Just two shots.
Coming up, Teo Hardeman's going to join me. We're going to talk about violence. The weekend is here. We'll talk about what it takes to decrease violence in the city of Chicago. Also tonight, the week that was with Aaron Freeman and Ken Davis. All that's coming up tonight on The Download on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
I am doing well. Fly that W, shall we?
All right. How about it? I mean, it was tough last night not getting the clinch right in that the beginning of the show, but at least you got it right afterwards with Patty.
That was like slowly letting the air out of a balloon, you know, kind of that,
right.
sort of thing. Yeah. But yeah, no, you know what? And what better way to do it than a walk-off in the bottom of the 10th,
yeah,
and then
nice,
you know, the crowd goes crazy. And
yeah, at least I thought for a minute they were going to lose that game and then celebrate, and I'd be like, what is going on? Like, yeah. This couldn't be the limpiest celebration of all time, but
like
they
a bad
got it.
Bar mitzvah or something. It's like, oh,
exactly, man. They got it though. They got it. They got it right.
They ran out of the cake.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN Chicago. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me now, the president of the Violence Interrupters Incorporated and an adjunct professor of criminal justice at Governor State University. A return visit for Teo Hardeman. Mr. Hardeman, good to see you.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here with you, Justin.
I really enjoyed our conversation. You were a guest at the big table not too long ago. This week is a big one, obviously. We saw what happened not only with last week's numbers, but the week before with Labor Day when it comes to violence. Today, the mayor... policy kind of leaked out. It was an article in the Sun-Times about a tactic that he wants to take when it comes to violence. And it's really about looking more at social than criminal and really pointing a finger at absentee fathers. This was the article saying that's really what he sees to be a problem in the African-American community when it comes to gun violence. Your violence interrupter, you've been there. Is he on the right course?
Well, definitely as it relates to having more fathers in the homes, it couldn't hurt, okay? We do have an issue in the African-American community with like maybe 7 out of 10 homes do not have fathers or male role models in the household. That's documented. However, the mayor is not really in a position to talk about that because he has his own skeletons in his closet with the cover-up of the Laquan McDonald, you know, homicide.
Right.
And so the mayor is just reaching for straws, basically, because every initiative that the police department, and I'm not anti-police, I want to make that clear, but every initiative they try to deploy in the community, they don't see any results. Superintendent Eddie Johnson said that they take a gun off the streets every hour. Taking guns off the streets, that's not reducing the killings and shootings in Chicago. We have a public health emergency going on in Chicago, which needs to be addressed. President Obama needs to, on a higher level, address this as a public health emergency.
You took my second question. the idea, I mean, that's kind of how I set it up. The concept of calling the gun violence epidemic a state of emergency, almost like what you do with a flood or what you do with other.
Right.
That's been thrown out. Not necessarily the trite bringing the National Guard. That's not what that means.
Exactly.
State of emergency means federal money and resources being given to an issue that needs to be addressed. You believe that gun violence and what's happening in the south and west sides of Chicago, all of Chicago, is it meets that standard.
Yes, without a doubt, because violence spreads like an infectious disease, you know, because it continues to happen no matter what you do. If the police work overtime, the violence is still high. If they don't work overtime, it doesn't really matter. See, everybody in Chicago is in response mode, which dictates coming after somebody gets shot. The police have been responding like this for over 100 years. The majority of community groups come after somebody gets shot. You have a prayer vigil. You go out there and you shut down a street and all that. But the thing is, you got to go directly to the shooters if you want to stop the killing. And a lot of people are afraid to approach those type of guys. Superintendent Johnson.
So the preventative is always just about raising awareness. But if you really want to get preventative, go to the, I mean, because super, like you were just going to say, I'm assuming Superintendent Johnson has the list.
Exactly. He talked about a list of 1,400 individuals that are driving the violence. If you have a list, why don't you turn that list over to community organizations like Violence Interrupters? Give us the resources to work directly with the guys on the list if they're the ones driving the violence. I know for a fact that most of the violence out here is interpersonal conflict. People are getting into it about some of any and everything. So it's hard to stop it because people don't talk about killing. They just commit to act. So we need more help on a public health level so that people can get the necessary resources they need to think on a higher level. Because, you know, violence is learned behavior, behavior passed down from generation to generation.
Well, I mean, that's really at the core of it. It's about resources. If it's going to be federal resources, that's one thing. Right. We've heard here in the city, Mayor Emanuel pledged to put more police officers on the street to find money for more police officers. Do you think that there's money in the city budget, in the state budget, to be able to fund violence prevention without using the federal government?
Well, the thing is, we have to think about a radical approach in Chicago. We have over 500 homicides this year. Over 3,000 people have been shot. So we need the type of resources where we can go hire those shooters out there and turn those guys into peacemakers, and I can train them in the art of violence interruption.
Actually, hire the gangbangers out of the gang.
That's what I'm talking about.
Really?
That's how it's needed.
Okay,
yeah,
let me ask you about that, because you know a lot of people will say that the gangbang is a livelihood. It's something that there's a drug trade they're protecting. There's some. Do you feel like that would be something that they would be interested in if you had money and you said, hey, I will give you a paycheck. I will give you the money to replace that if you come on my side and help stop violence. You think that the young kids slanging on the block are interested in that?
Well, 30% of the violence pretty much surrounds itself around the drug sales. Some guys are making money. But 70% of the violence, guys are just shooting because of reputation. They're shooting because of revenge motives. I don't like this guy. Interpersonal conflict. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is give me the 1,400 individuals and give me the resources to hire those guys directly and let me work with them because I have a proven track record. You know, when I was the director of Ceasefire Illinois, I hired over 300 ex-offenders. And we got the job done. Homicides were down by 25% in the city of Chicago. So everything I talk about is based on data. Give me the people, the toughest guys in Chicago, and let me work with them. I guarantee you we can reduce homicides in Chicago by at least 30 to 40%.
Wow. I'm listening. Tio Hardiman in studio with me right now. I'm interested, though, because, you know, we had Philip Jackson on talking about his peace surge that he did just after Labor Day, which was somewhat successful. I mean, successful in terms of awareness, but still the numbers were through the roof, the biggest holiday weekend when it comes to violence. Right. How can you guarantee the numbers will go down just based on this? Because it does feel that violence is evolving in the way that it's changing from maybe how it was done in the 90s or the 2000s. It's become, as you mentioned, interpersonal and just so much about little beefs, stuff that isn't even in the old days. It would be, I'm going to push you in the shoulder. Instead, now people are shooting people, taking people's lives.
Well, a lot of mental health problems exist in Chicago. A lot of psychotic behavior. So what I'm saying to the city leaders and the governor and everybody, I have a proven track record. Give me the shooters. Let me work with them. And I guarantee you we will reduce violence by 40% in Chicago because the young guys need somebody that can join their world and then bring them into to a higher level of understanding. And I can do that. I'm like a general, you know. I can get to guys and talk their language and let them know, look, brother, I need you to help me. And now you're getting paid to help bring peace to your community. Put the gun down and take care of your family, my brother. Take care of your people.
We talked about this when you were here before, and I thought that to be very compelling, the concept of how you even engage with somebody who is a shooter, how you engage with somebody who's in a gang. Mm-hmm. I mean, is it something that you – I mean, obviously, you've been doing this for years, and you know, you're a mature gentleman. You know, you're getting up there in age, Tio.
Right.
But the concept being, do they see you coming, and they go, here comes Uncle Tio. I'm going to roll my eyes. I mean, how do you develop a rapport with a 17, 16-year-old, 15-year-old kid who has a gun.
Well, what helps me out a lot is most guys know about me before I even come on the block. You know, they've heard about my work as Ceasefire, my work as the president of Violence Interrupters. You know, I ran for governor before. So I'm like a stand-up community guy, you know, so they kind of respect my opinion, so to speak. So when I show up, I catch some guys one-on-one, and I basically go off on them, man. You know you shouldn't be out here pulling this gun on nobody. I mean, what's really going on with you? Now, one good thing about it is I have total respect. It's called a ghetto pass. Any block I go on, I tell the guys in advance I'm coming out. Hey, come on out, my brother. What you need? And a lot of guys flock to me when I come out in the community, so I appreciate that. Now, there's certain levels of killers that you're not going to stop. Some of these guys, they work in security on the block. You have to talk to the guy that's paying them to work security in order to stop them guys from shooting somebody.
That's their job.
That's right. That's
right. Right. I mean, it's terrible, but that's their job, right?
That's what I'm talking about.
They're not going to listen to you. You know, they're getting paid by somebody else. T.O. Hardiman, my guest in studio. We're talking about violence, gun violence here in Chicago. He's the president of Violence Interrupters Incorporated. He's also an adjunct professor of criminal justice at Governor State University. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, continue the conversation. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman talking gun violence as we get ready for this weekend. T.O. Hardiman's in studio. He's the president of Violence Interrupters Incorporated, as well as an adjunct professor at Governor State University in the field of criminal justice. T.O., I'm interested because, you know, today that was such a big article, and it's coming out next week, so it'll be big news when we talk about Rahm Emanuel really being able to shift what he wants to do. And it sounds like, and he's talking to a lot of different leaders in the African American community about the idea of almost shifting from criminal to social. That, you know, there are social problems that need to be addressed, and if we can address those social problems like absentee fathers, that will help to reduce violence.
Well, the bigger question, how are you going to address the issue of absentee fathers? This has been going on for a long time. I've said it many times before. In order to really reduce the violence, African-American men must get involved in the lives of their cousins, their nephews, and their sons and daughters, whatever the case may be. That's a no-brainer. The thing is, the mayor's reaching for straws because of political cronyism. They continue to fund a lot of groups out here, and they always talking about more police, and it's not working right now. So now reach for something else, a social way to attack the violence. The reality, the only way you're going to stop it, and I'm the first one to say this, you must have a relationship with the killers out there, and that relationship must be good enough where them guys will listen to you when you ask them not to shoot somebody.
The Chicago police will probably push back because they don't necessarily, not unlike we hear from the federal government when they say we don't negotiate with terrorists, they're not looking to have a relationship with the shooters. The shooters are the criminals.
Well, the Chicago police have to kind of grow a little bit. That's the reason why I always talk about there's a need for a younger police superintendent in Chicago, someone between the ages of 30 and 35, someone that has not been pretty much tainted with all the old school policing strategies, so we can meet these young people where they are right now. See, nobody wants to talk about that. It would be revolutionary to hire a female, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, young police chief in Chicago for the first time, and then allow them to start, because you need somebody with a younger mind that understands what's going on in current times, because the gangs have evolved into cliques. It's not like it used to be. Everybody has a crazy cousin. You need to know the block-by-block dynamics in order to stop the killing out here. This is nothing new. You know, I looked at the homicide rates all the way back to 1928. And you had over 400 homicides in Chicago in 1928. So the police are more like in a response mode, like I say, coming after the fact. Mm-hmm. The police, and I'm not anti-police, I have to make that clear, but they should be change the name on the car to serve and respond, because everybody waits for the crime to be committed, then they get involved.
You know, I mean, for all the conversations we have as well, I mean, the Chicago police, that is what we expect of them, to serve and respond. I don't expect the Chicago police in any form, and I don't think our leaders do, or even the taxpayers expect them to go out and prevent crime. How can they do that? They need to be in a position where they can solve crime, or they can deter crime, I guess would be a better way to think about it.
Well, this is the catch, Brother Justin. I'm glad you brought that up. The homicide clearance rate is only about 32% in the city, so they're not even solving the crimes. So what I'm saying is that stop going on the news talking about you got these plans to reduce the killings if you don't know how to solve or reduce the killings. And what I'm saying is that I'm willing to train police. Also, this would be revolutionary in the art of conflict resolution. So they can go out here and maybe bring some of these guys to see that the police can be very effective if they just listen here. You can go to the guys and say, look, I don't want to know nothing about you with no guns. I don't want to know anything about anything. I just want to stop you from killing this other guy. We know you're going to do it, but let's talk about it, see if we can work it out.
Well, I mean, I think that there may be steps going in that direction. The idea that the superintendent has continued to press the fact that he has a list, that there's 1,400, it was 12 to 1,400 shooters right. that they know. That has to be something that is of value to them, that they know this at some point or another, resources, programs, police training, something is going to move in the direction of addressing those 12 to 1,400 people.
Well, this is the thing. There's a professor out of, named David Kennedy out of John Jay College out on the East Coast. The list has been talked about all the way back to Jody Weiss, Superintendent McCarthy, Project okay. Safe Neighborhoods. They have all these guys come in. They talk to them, talk down to them, really. You better not commit no crimes or this was going to happen. Everybody knows about the list. It's been talked about for years. I'm talking about, okay. if not a decade now. So if that be the case, what have you done with the list over the last 10 years? Zero. If the same people are driving the violence, what we have to do is become more proactive and preventive opposed to responding. Because everybody's making good names for themselves in the media every time somebody gets shot. Whether it be a preacher, whether it be a community, whoever, hey, we're going to go march today. Go march on the killer's front porch. Okay?
I love that concept. I mean, obviously changing the paradigm to where, you know, the shooters and the killers are the ones that are that's where the focus is.
Right.
As opposed to the police or I mean, and with all due respect and a lot of respect to victims. But in terms of the killers and the shooters, the ones, if we know who's doing this, then maybe bring the fight to them in terms of protests and whatever.
Right.
The question I have, and it's the same as you just said, like when there is a tragedy, it is exploited.
Right.
It's exploited by whether it be a community activist or a church or police or whatever it might be. But the question I have is how, if you're expecting to bring resources in, mm-hmm. new resources, and they want to come, how do you keep it from that money being exploited, for that money being misused? We saw what happened with the governor's plan, with the Governor Quinn. I mean, we know right. the history of ceasefire in a way. How do you make it so that the money actually goes to the bottom line, which is reducing violence?
Well, you have to make sure the resources go to maybe an outsider. Somebody that's not part of the cronyism, somebody that you can support and fund that's still going to speak his mind, his or her mind, in spite of you funding them, because a lot of people compromise once they become a part of the cronyism.
Because they want another check, right?
That's what I'm talking right. about. So I get more results from young men that are not on nobody's payroll, and I ask them to go do me a favor and stop a killing. They go do it for me. They're not even getting paid. That's the reason why I know beyond a shadow of a doubt I can train young men and potential shooters out there to become peace ambassadors here in Chicago, and together we can reduce homicides by 40%.
What's happening this weekend as we get ready? What give us a quick insight to what you think is going to happen this weekend. Are we going to see the same kind of numbers that we saw last week and the weekend before when it comes to not only shootings but homicides?
Well, hopefully it won't be as high as the Labor Day weekend, but at the same time, we can always expect a few homicides over the weekend and several shootings because it's become the norm. That's why it has to be addressed as a public health emergency, because every weekend we're looking at this. Every year we're expecting over 400 homicides in Chicago. To the credit of some of my staff, we mediated 25 conflicts so far this year that could have turned deadly, and we stopped somebody from killing another person.
Well, Tio, continue the work. I'm excited to have you back on, because I'd love to talk to you more about this and make it a regular appearance on the yes. download, just about how solutions and how we can solve problems that are happening to help reduce gun violence. Tio Hardeman is the president of Violence Interrupters Incorporated. He's also an adjunct professor of criminal justice at Governor State University. Tio, thanks for being here.
Appreciate you, Justin.
It's the download here on 720 WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. With you till 10 o'clock tonight, Preps Plus Chicago takes over at that point with Sam Panionovich, Kevin Powell, of course, talk about high school football. That's coming up at 10 o'clock. Right now, though, with the week that was, we reload the news. What was the biggest story of the week? What was overreported? What was underreported? The winners, the losers, what story sucked you down the rabbit hole? And, of course, which story will be remembered from this week? 50, 100, 500 years from now, I'm so happy to introduce my panel of friends. Aaron Freeman is here. Aaron Freeman, longtime comedian here in Chicago. He's also the artist in residence for the Chicago Council on Science and Technology. You can follow him on Twitter at ExcitableApe and on his YouTube channel, neursciencecomedy.com. Good to see you, buddy.
Delighted to be here, my brother. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And, of course, Ken Davis. Good to see Ken Davis. Ken Davis, of course, the host of Chicago Newsroom, which you can see on CAN TV here in Chicago. And he's also our guest through election coverage when we were here for the conventions and other places. Ken, great to see you.
Great to be back. Thanks for the invite.
All right, so let's get to this, you guys. I mean, this
I think it's cool you're doing this, by the way, this weekend.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I think that it's fun to sort of unwind on a Friday. We realized we didn't really have a place for it, so let's do it. All right, why don't we start with you, Ken? What do you got, Ken? What's the biggest story of the week in your eyes?
You know, I don't. This is the one place where I don't really have much. It was a weird week. It was like there's a lot going on, but I didn't feel like we had like a blockbuster story this week. I mean, I think, you know, this thing with Johnson and Stein getting knocked off the first debate is kind of that's a breaking story more than the biggest story, but that'll have some impact.
So they're not going to be in we kind of saw that coming though, right? Yeah. I mean, the big show is Trump Clinton, and they're not going to be like Trump Clinton and they're the third person we're going to get 15 minutes to. No, it's going to be Trump Clinton.
Right. Yeah, because remember how sad it was during the Democratic debate when who was the really good-looking guy?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's his name?
What was the
quick we forget?
Quick? McCarthy?
He was beautiful. I couldn't.
O'Malley.
Yeah, so he got like, you know, well, they told me I could get one interruption. I mean, it was just so sad.
Well, I mean, obviously it's coming up here, September 26th are the debates, and it just seems like with all of the media coverage, and it's a ton, whether it be gaffes and whether it be, scandals.
WikiLeaks.
WikiLeaks, emails. You just get the feel that I mean, it's just this one big show leading up to the debate, which is on September 26th.
You know, I had this feeling all week long that I wasn't willing to articulate to any living human being until Zorn wrote about it today, which is this thing about, you know, Trump is right about this. The biggest TV event in the history of the medium would be if you just put the two of them in. It would be nice if you had a chain link fence
like
around
a cage.
Yeah, just put the two of them in there for 2 hours and say, okay, that's
he
it.
He did a whole column today about getting rid of the debate moderator.
Yeah.
That moderator causes the problems because there's bias and the fact that these questions, you get 2 minutes.
Artificial.
Then they say, let's
move
on to climate change. You're like, we don't want to talk about climate. We want to continue with what Trump and Clinton are talking about here. And Donald Trump is... You know, I think it's safe to say that he doesn't, that's not his format to be everything in 1 minute little bites and then, you know, acquiesce and let the other person talk, right? That's not going to happen.
There was a really interesting story also about that Facebook and Google are going to be feeding to the moderators commentary from the Twitter line, which will be like, and what does Donald Trump think about really cute cats?
that's the fear, right? That's the fear that it'll be dumbed down, right?
Yeah. The Twitterverse is not exactly the deepest intellectual content that one will find here on planet Earth. But it never occurred to me that Jill Stein was never even close, right? She never was in double digits. She was never.
Pulled. I don't think
there's
so.
Been a couple articles this week about Gary Johnson idea that he could really
that
hurt
he was
Hillary
getting
Clinton.
Fairly close. Right. And I guess it's just kind of like this reality check when it finally happens and they say, no, not going to happen. He's like, so this really is happening, isn't it? There's going to be like a week from Monday. These two are going to be on the same.
There
TV
is something
screen.
About it as political observers where you. You know, the fact that the media wants a good show and they want great ratings and they want everything that goes along with a good debate, that they're willing to sort of, you know, cut corners when it comes to democracy and say, hey, it's Trump Clinton, deal with it, because they know they're just going to get. And that's scary in a way, because it gets a little bit more Running Man, like the movie Room, where everything is like a game show. And the fact that it's these two candidates because these two get the best ratings.
Somebody was talking about that there is very serious censorship in the U.S. It is. Commercial censorship.
Yeah.
That which will get the most eyeballs and sell the most fizzy drink or whatever it is we're doing these days. Yeah. That is what gets heard and we are constrained from saying or doing things that will diminish our commercial value.
I mean, there's something to be said about how we see this election playing out. The stories that are the most salacious, the ones that, you keep seeing the same kind of thought pieces that are over and over and over about how Trump is, you know, the worst candidate, and it's the same journalism. It's the same. And it's because they probably a week before they said, wow, this is getting great numbers.
Sure.
Well, let's get another columnist to write the same thing.
I don't know if we're like wandering away from the big story of the week here, but it's been really interesting to watch the media reaction today to Trump's little infomercial thing that he pulled off at the hotel today. Here he says, you know, we're gonna have a press conference, and it turns out to be a 30-minute commercial for his hotel, and what you're seeing for the first time is a bunch of media executives saying, You know, we were kind of played by him.
Yeah. You know? There's just decorum and respect. I mean, you're not going to go in front of and say you have a major announcement. Everybody show up. Right. And then he shows up 90 minutes late. He does 30 minutes on how great his hotel is.
One of the greatest.
This is the presidential candidate of the Republican Party.
They stay live. They stay with it.
They stay. And, you know, it's. I mean, I guess you compare it to past presidential campaigns. What if George W. Bush was like, you know, the Texas Rangers got a great chance this year? If he did like 40 minutes on the Texas Rangers or anything. I mean, it just to me, it's so commercial. And it. I mean, it's that fine line. I guess that's the fine line in Spinal Tap where they say there's a fine line between stupid and clever. And I feel like Donald Trump straddles that line in the way
that he takes it all the way up to 11.
Either he's a genius knowing that this is, you know, he's just going to play with the media, or he's or he's stupid where he's like, I know, you know what, this would be great for a hotel.
Well, you know, I, with full recognition of how incredibly stupid this sounds as it comes out of my mouth. I wonder if maybe this is the moment. Maybe today was the day that Trump actually pushed it.
I can't even finish this.
Well, let me. Can I ask you, Ken?
Yeah.
How many times have you said that over the last 9 months?
You know,
how many times have you said, well, this is the thing. Right here. This is it. There's no way.
This is the game changer.
This is right here.
The moment.
In fairness to me, yeah. I stopped doing that about 2 months ago, right?
We all did.
But today it's come back. It's like, maybe this is it. You know why? Because the thing that he did today with trying to say that Hillary Clinton started the birther movement.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I think that is such a whopper that even the most, what do we call them, information...
conspiracy theorists? Or,
you know, people with low levels of information or whatever those people are called. Even those
folks... The undereducated.
Right. Even those folks are saying, no, I don't think that's right.
And, you know, I think you're playing with words a little bit because, yes, I believe Hillary Clinton probably did some dancing around the topic when she was running against Barack Obama in 2008.
I don't think she did.
But we all know, that Donald Trump was the one who ran with it. There are thousands of tweets that say so. Aaron Freeman, Ken Davis in studio with me tonight. Yes. Let's come back. We'll take a quick break. Let's do Aaron's big story of the week and get going.
Hey, let's take a break. Okay.
Let's take a quick break. Hey, can we take a break, guys?
I think so.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Aaron Freeman and Ken Davis. We're breaking down. We're reloading this week's news. Reload.
We're breaking down.
We're breaking it down. The week that was. All right, so we're still on the biggest story of the week. Ken said there really wasn't a big story. Aaron, what's your big story?
Well, I thought we were doing the biggest winner of the week.
Well, that's coming up. That's next.
That's coming up.
Yeah, well, Aaron, look, obviously. I'm sorry. I thought I did. All right, so obviously.
Did you get the email?
Excuse me. You're trying to make up for the fact that you were so completely wrong about there not being a big story. But let me say this. I want to say, well, no. Here's the big story. By far, this by bar none, the Cubs win the National League. What are you talking about? How is there anything bigger than that? I mean, this is like the culmination.
Such a non-sports guy.
I'm telling you. Look, I mean, the last time the Cubs were in the World Series, 1945, I was minus 11 years old in 1945, okay? I mean, this is a huge shoe. And not only that. Well, also...
Was that when that won? Wow.
1945 was when they were... Yeah, they won in 1908.
Yeah.
Yeah, last time they were in the series was 45.
But, because, you know, that the joke is, you know, what did Jesus say to the Cubs? Don't do anything till I get back. But but actually, there's as a representing the Chicago Council on Science and Technology, there is some fascinating neuroscience. If you go to my website, neurosciencecomedy.com, there's some fascinating neuroscience attendant to the Cubs. For example, you know, in Pavlov's dogs, when they saw the little red light, they would commence to salivating.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that has to do with the production of a neurotransmitter called dopamine, which has to do with our expectation of a positive reward.
You can bring this back to the Cubs?
Of course.
Right
this
now.
This is what Aaron does.
At this very moment. Right. As we all know, in every October for most of my life, we've said, next year. Because the thing about what makes us unique as human beings can maintain high level of dopamine secretion in expectation of events they don't expect to see in their lifetimes.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So they keep pushing it forward.
That's
right?
What makes us different from all the other animals, because like no chimp will think, well, maybe next year I'm going to get a piece of banana. That's just not how it works. But Cub fans, we keep no matter how much heartbreak, so we maintain that high level of dopamine secretion. separation, which separates us from human beings, which is to say
that should be the welcome to Chicago, Mayor Rahm Emanuel. We have high levels of dopamine secretions.
It's possible. It's possible.
Well, I mean, it's a big story, and it is great, and it's a positive story. Obviously, doing it at home at Wrigley Field today, a big celebration.
Yep. Yeah,
and you know, last night, even though they lost last night, the anticipation was there.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's stuff that's just foreign to the city of Chicago when it comes to
baseball.
I was
listening to you last night. It was so sad.
I wanted it so bad.
I know you did.
I wanted it. It's that moment of like being on the air on WGN, you know?
Yeah, joking.
I wanted to be in the back of a pickup truck in Wrigleyville. Like, oh, stop moving the truck. Stop.
You know what was cool was seeing that picture of Theo Epstein in the bleachers today. That was pretty cool.
This team is a fun ride. And Theo Epstein dresses up in a mustache and hangs out with the fans. It's such a great time. So anyway, all right, let's get to winners and losers. My winner is obviously the Chicago Cubs. That's the big thing.
That's right.
What do you got for winners, Ken?
Well, first of all, of course, Barack Obama, because now officially today he's a citizen of the United States.
That's a big win for him.
I would say it's a very broad thing, but the winners are the workers of America, who apparently for the first time in like 8 years got a raise. So ring the bell for us.
You mean the fact that the mean income of the nation, according to the Department of Labor, I think it was Census. Yeah, mean income up 5. That's my biggest winners as well.
Oh no!
Well, that's good.
Although
great
it is fair to say
alike.
It would like so much. It is, as we were saying, on a spectrum.
Yeah, it is.
Back when we were young men, we didn't have no that blame spectra. It was either rich or you're poor. There was no spectrum around here.
Now it's very specific. They can bend those numbers anyway.
When we were young men, there was good news and there was
bad news. That's exactly
right. You can't have good news anymore. Everything is nuanced. Somebody tweets about why it's not a good thing immediately.
And of course, in this case, I guess the people in the income gains were much stronger in the cities than they were in the rural. But of course, that depends on how we are defining rural because there are places.
It's hard to even read that stuff. It's hard because of the nuances.
Except that I think that Obama planned it so that it would just be the Trump people who would get hurt the most.
Right.
Well, I think they're doing pretty well. The top 1%
those Trump people. Yeah, like everything else, it's all a
spectrum. That's right.
All right, let's do losers real quick. What do you got on losers?
Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, oh. I have Jimmy Fallon down as well. Jimmy Fallon last night with a very fawning light interview with Donald Trump, where he plays with his hair a little bit.
Well, there's
been a lot of fight over this because people are like, Jimmy Fallon's not a journalist. He can do whatever he wants to do. Mm-hmm. It's just we expected a little bit more. He was just doing games and stuff with Donald Trump.
But wasn't he always, doesn't he do the same thing with Hillary Clinton? He doesn't do anything heavy with Hillary.
Who was it? Slate Today did a transcript of all of his questions. And it's just like it makes your stomach turn to watch it. It's like, you know, did you always think you were going to get into politics? You know, that kind of just like, ooh.
It wasn't very deep.
He's no Mike Wallace.
You know, there's a problem is that right now on late night TV, you've got a Stephen Colbert who's going to probably be a much more political satire when it comes to Donald Trump. You've got the ghost of David Letterman who, you know, would not give Donald Trump a pass and towards the end of his career even called him a racist, you know. I mean, there's a lot there that Jimmy Fallon kind of was playing against. I also have as a loser Colin Powell. Because Colin Powell's email's linked and we have a different understanding of what Colin Powell thinks and does behind closed emails.
But how did he lose, though? How is that? I just say
it's a loser because, you know, obviously his reputation and what he was saying, the things he was saying in email, I felt like he was a catty teenager in half the emails.
So where do you stand on this spectrum of opinion about the fact that it's just wrong for somebody like to have his personal emails hacked? And
well,
for them,
I think it is wrong.
Not my possession. I shouldn't be privy.
Well,
to his
I have that actually as when we get to overreported and underreported. The underreported story, and we'll do that when we come back. And this will be good for the listeners too.
Yeah, we need a break.
981-7200.
We need to sell some fizzy water.
What I want to, and we have some people on the line, Chris and John, and I'll get to you guys as well. I'm interested in locally. The Attorney General, Lisa Madigan, talking about a ruling that is really being protested this week or is under the police union wants to push back, that police officers' personal email, their Gmail, their AOL, whatever, is public property and can be accessed by media. That's the one where I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
you know, I mean, I understand the concept that they're public servants and they work for the yep. police department, but I'm not sure they're politicians. I'm not sure they're leaders in the sense that they're making policy decisions
sure,
behind
agree.
Closed doors. Yep. So we'll talk about
and
that.
And what if they do want to make a nasty comment about they're something to their friend?
Do. Right.
We all do.
Right. And it's not fair to color well, them in a way. Yeah, you don't. Of
no,
course you
no.
don't.
Ken see, Davis. Brings up color again. There it is. Right there, you see. There it is. Right now, it all comes out.
It was coming. It took me just a half hour. All right,
let's take
hour.
A break.
Ken Davis, Aaron Freeman in studio. We're doing the week that was. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio with me two gentlemen reloading this week's news. Ken Davis, who is the host of Chicago Newsroom.
Hello.
CAN TV, and Aaron Freeman, longtime comedian and host and media guy here in Chicago. He's also the artist in residence for the Chicago Council on Science and Technology. Follow him on Twitter at Excitable Ape and on his YouTube channel, neurosciencecomedy.com. All
don't
right.
forget, do the white thing.
And do yeah.
And I must say, though, I am so rarely called a gentleman. I really I guess at my, you know, they say the three ages of a man. Youth, middle age, and you look good. So having achieved that final status, I'm rarely called a gentleman, so I really appreciate it. Anyway, go ahead.
Let's go to John. John, you wanted to chime in tonight on the biggest stories of the week. What's your take?
Hey, gentlemen. How are we doing tonight?
Good, man. Good.
Best day of my life.
Okay, well, you guys are laughing and chuckling, and you're talking about this whole birther thing, and I just thought I'd push back a little bit Uh-oh. If you can handle it for 2 seconds. Look, there's the fake birther thing and there's the real birther thing. So, I don't know, can you handle the real birther thing?
Yes.
Bring it on. Keep it clean.
Two layers there, you know, because you guys like to laugh about everything, but you don't want to tell people the truth. Number one is the accusation that who he claims is his father is not his father. That's what's damaging because he wrote a book, and, you know, and if that book is, you know, based on fallacies, then he looks bad, okay?
Who's his father?
That birther issue.
Who's his father?
Who well, is
his
I
real
know.
Darth Vader. Some his real father think... is Darth Vader. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, some people think it's Frank Davis. I don't know. You'd have to do okay. you know, the test in the lab. But the bigger birther issue that none of you people want to talk about is that we are in a watered-down frickin' monarchy. Can you handle that? That's right. He is a cousin, distant, but he's a cousin of the Bushes. He's even a closer cousin of Dick Cheney. He was on PBS in 08 on Tavis Smiley's show, and they laughed it up. Oh, black sheep of the family, oh, family reunions, ha, ha, ha. Yeah, that's the real
so you think
issue.
That, no, so, okay,
everybody
so,
cannot become president of the United States. No, people, it's not true, okay?
So Obama,
so
thank you for that, John.
Okay.
Thank you for that, John. Okay, I'm not, you know, so you're saying Obama is the cousin of Dick Cheney and the Bushes.
Well, right. I mean, you and I and Ken all have the exact same mitochondrial DNA in all of our cells. We are descended from the same single African woman 100,000 years ago in Central Africa.
My brother.
I mean, it's true. So one can make a good, clean, genealogical argument that we are, in fact, all cousins. And, in fact, George Bush is related to me and you.
Yeah, okay.
So if you want to get all genetic about it, so the caller's right.
I had no problem with John. I loved how he just continued to rip on the fact that we're having fun.
Well,
it seemed like in every
that.
Third way he would, the sentence was like, I know you guys are having so much fun, but let me tell you about the real story.
I'm feeling guilty now.
What do you got? Let's get to the overreported, underreported, overreported. What do you got on overreported, guys?
I say that the most overreported story is Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah,
just a ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It continues. I mean, Sunday was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, who cares? Although I do like to think of him as sort of the Muhammad Ali of the 21st century, because Muhammad Ali was a really great star in his sport and known to millions when he made his political stand. But it's the 21st century. You don't got to be that great.
You can be a second string quarterback.
It's okay. You just do anything that somebody notices, and all of a sudden you can be a Twitter star.
Yeah,
it's the Frosh Soft team or something like that. Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that story continues. That was also the overreported last week. So, I mean, right. It continues to be overreported. I wonder if you'll see it start to die down as players continue to consistently kneel for the anthem, that you won't have as much press about it because it just becomes...
I mean, that really seems to be the case. It's like we get like a box score every day of how many more people are doing it, right?
And their race. Now, the white woman who kneeled,
that's
too.
That's right.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think my guess, being the prognosticator that I am, is that it'll just burn itself out maybe in another week or so.
Well, I've learned some things about sports and the anthem from this experience, and one of which is that players, most sports, they didn't go out on the field for the national anthem up until 2009. And 2009 was the first time that the NFL, at least with the National Football League, decided that that was mandated, that players had to come out and stand for the national anthem.
Really?
There's a lot about the military. There's a lot of military. There's a lot of money to the NFL. So there was this thing where they wanted to show a little bit more. So it seems in the argument that this has like been America since the anthem was written. In 1840, they're all standing out there with their leather helmets on. That's not how it's been. And even when the anthem, when you're at the Cubs game, if you think about it, the Cubs aren't on the field. The Cubs are in the dugout.
Right,
so
I've never thought about it.
Yeah, so it's
there's
not
so many
that,
of those
yeah.
things. Like the anthem was only adopted in like 1930 or something, right?
Yeah, so there's a lot
and, you
learn
know,
about
in
from
God
this thing.
We
yeah.
Trust was added, in what, the 50s or something?
Right. So, one nation under God.
One under God,
God,
right.
Right.
Yeah, so it's like it just becomes this kind of weird media thing that is. I don't know. It's just out of proportion.
You know, I'm reminded of Peter Jennings, who said the smartest thing I recall about it after the phenomenon in 2002. He said that after 9/11, there was martial music in the air, and people in the media were afraid not to march at peril of being called unpatriotic.
Very well put.
And you know, I can imagine that the NFL, because they do appeal, their appeal is to testosteronic young men.
And then James Balser, the former alderman here in Chicago, had this really knee-jerk. First of all, I didn't know that former aldermen could introduce ordinances. They said the former alderman introduced ordinance. I'm like, what? Bert Nateris is like, we can do that?
It wasn't really so much an ordinance as a sentence,
And then there's no punishment to it. But the idea that everybody has to stand for the national anthem, that was essentially it. Regardless of sports, anything. Like if the national anthem is playing, you better be standing.
And not
it's a very strange ordinance.
It may be inappropriate to raise this on commercial radio, but the point has been made over and over in the last week or so that every TV and radio outlet cuts away from the national anthem to sell products.
And I was going to say they rarely. I mean, the 9/11 tributes aside, being the opening day for NFL, but rarely do they show the anthem on a broadcast game on a football Sunday.
That's not part of the thing,
and especially
make
baseball.
Money doing that.
Right. So they've already commercial networks have decided their patriotism by cutting away for money, but the players can't kneel. Okay, let's go to under my overreported was Trump on Dr. Oz, the weird sort of one page. How do
I
you,
had Trump do taxes,
you,
same thing.
Do you exercise?
I
don't exercise. I'm like,
I wave
my
arms
God,
a lot.
What is happening? That we're going on to daytime talk shows to break news. I just thought
we
that
can't
was
get away from this Trump guy, can we?
Yeah.
It's true. It's like, look at this. Everywhere you turn, the lead story is, will Donald Trump release his taxes?
Yeah.
Well, no, he won't. Okay, next story.
And I saw a great Facebook post today. I can't remember who put this up, but it was essentially calling out what's going to happen. What the win and the loss is politically for all of this tax return stuff. If he puts them out, people who are voting for Donald Trump don't care what the results are.
Right.
It's not good. If let's say that it says that he did pay taxes. Well, then that's not good for the Democrats because he didn't do anything wrong. If he doesn't pay taxes, the Republicans are like, bravo, way to go. You got this. That's what a true millionaire does, a freedom fighter. So there's no real win in this weird drummed up controversy to hear his tax returns. Yeah. All right, so let's quickly do the – actually, let's take a quick break. Ken looks tired.
this is exhausting.
Well, I want to come back and do underreported, and I want to get to Chris because he's got a good one on the line. And I also want to get to your underreported, and we'll also get to what story sucked you down the rabbit hole, and then finish up with what story will we remember from this week in 30, 50,
thanks for keeping track of all this.
There you go. Stay with us. Ken Davis, Aaron Freeman in studio with me. It's Download 720 WGN. We're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. We're doing the underreported. Let's go to Chris. Chris, what do you got for underreported stories?
My underreported story is the Paralympics currently taking place in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil.
Very little coverage on this. I thought, Chris, there was talk before the Olympics started that there was going to be a lot of cutbacks because of the funding and stuff. How has that played out?
I can't speak to the specifics. I know that the games have gone very well. I'm very happy with NBC. Compared to 5.5 hours of coverage from London, they're up to 66 hours of coverage between NBC Sports Network and NBC.
Okay.
And I highly recommend people check out the coverage of 2 to 5 p.m. on Sunday afternoon on NBC. The men's team is competing in the gold medal game for the first time since 1988 tomorrow, and there are several Chicago ties on the team.
All right, there you go. That's great, Chris. Yeah, thank you for that. Thank you, man.
Too, huh?
You know, somebody said that it would be a really great idea to do the Paralympics before.
Yeah, get people excited, like almost an opening act.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right, because they spent, I mean, I think that's the point Chris is making, is that NBC just put so much in the Olympics. We're tired out of Olympic conversation.
Right, by the time it's there, yeah.
I mean, we are. All right, what do you got for underreported, Mr. Davis?
Underreported? Well, I thought it was a fascinating story. Maybe it's not underreported. It was almost not reported at all. That thing about Willie Wilson bailing people out. I don't know if you saw that or not, but he went to Cook County Jail with $15,000.
The businessman who ran for mayor and president.
And for president, right. He went with, there were $15,000. He bailed six guys out and gave them $200 cash for food. And he's working with the sheriff, and Dart says that right now, at this moment, at Cook County Jail, there are 344 pretrial detainees who are there, have been there for a week or more. They don't have $1,000 or less than $1,000 to get out. So it's not a question of whether they're guilty or innocent. They haven't been to trial yet, but they're being held there because they don't have money. And they don't have families who can bail them out. So Willie Wilson is kind of highlighting that thing. And
that's a great way to use your brain.
It's a wonder.
It draws attention to something that you don't even think about, that somebody is not in a charge and they've yet to be tried, but they don't have the money because it's expensive to get out of jail. They get stuck in jail.
Before someone calls and points this out, many of them are probably guilty and will be found guilty at trial. But the point is, in our democracy, you're not supposed to be held in prison because you can't bail out, and it's a pretty huge problem. And I salute him for trying to do something about it.
It's certainly hard to imagine who gains by holding people in. I mean, well, if you run a privately owned prison and you're paying,
well, actually, the bail bond companies make a profit on it. Yeah. There are those.
Okay. There's a lot of profit that's in the shadows when it comes to prisons and jails, and that's the stuff that's keeping real reform, or at least the idea that they would let somebody out. Yep, you know, there's money to be made. That's a good one. What do you have for underreported?
I have for underreported that the Saudis admitted they'd been funding jihadis since the 60s.
Like that became their tagline? Funding jihadis since the 60s?
Yeah, they came out. Khalilzad, the former U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, former U.S. ambassador to Iraq, had a big article in Politico magazine about his most recent conversations with the Saudi royal family. Of course, he didn't run across any women walking down the street in Riyadh. But they said they have a new policy of glasnost, the Saudi version of glasnost, and that they said, okay, we started funding the religious guys in the 60s as a buffer against Nasser, the atheist Nasser, and then we worked with the Reagan administration to fund the religious guys in Afghanistan as a buffer against the atheist Soviet Union.
That to me is a rabbit hole story. Right?
Because
you're right. That is exactly. But it's always been politically motivated, it just makes your head. It makes me completely confused at what's right and what's wrong.
Well, you know, what's interesting is because they admit giving all these weapons and all this money to what later became the jihadi movement, and of course, the U.S. can't do much about it because we rely on our weapons sales to Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia is
one of the biggest consumers
now,
of U.S. weapons.
I don't know if it happened or not, but did Obama end up vetoing the bill in which you could sue, like someone who's a victim of?
I don't think it made it to
sue a different state.
He hasn't yet, though.
I don't think it's made to his name.
I don't think it's made it there, but that's fascinating. It's not going to happen, but the idea that made it through Congress, the idea that, well, if you were a victim of terrorism, terrorism and we can push it on somebody, then you can sue the state. You could sue Saudi Arabia itself to get
money. It's almost
money.
Like
That's
a new
crazy.
Category. Stories that you kind of always knew were true, but finally right, we know they are.
Right. Yeah.
Well, okay, so let's wrap up this half before we get to the news, just the idea that I brought up earlier about the emails, about whether or not the Illinois Attorney General, who said that private emails for Gmail, Earthlink, AOL for police officer is public, meaning that it can be FOIA'd by the media and it can be used as evidence in some forms. Obviously, they're interested in the officers that were involved with the Laquan McDonald shooting, what they said on channels that were not. This is a sticky wicket to me. This is where I feel like it goes over the line in the sense that this is it's set up as a personal email. It's sold as a personal email, Gmail. Sure. It's not cpd.org or, that it really should. I understand the concept that there may be evidence to some wrongdoing in there, but I feel like you're opening up a can of worms that cannot be reversed.
You're absolutely right about that. And I think that there are a lot of us who have spent our lives hanging around the journalism profession who are all gung-ho about FOIAing materials and getting
transparency
and getting all upset when somebody comes back and says we can't comply with your FOIA because it's burdensome. But this does seem to me like it crosses an entirely different line. It goes into a different realm. And I think it's because we all think, well, wow, I sure wouldn't like to suddenly open up the newspaper or my phone and see all of my emails being sent all over the place.
Because we know that they're looking for something specific, and maybe they'll find it, but we know how media works, that they'll go, oh, did you see what this person said a year ago?
Yeah.
Did you see what this person said that had nothing to do with what we were looking for? So you get to a certain point where words can be twisted and taken out of context, and jokes can be made serious, and serious stuff can be made joke. There's a lot that goes on in email. I still don't understand. You know, a friend sends me an email, I'm like, is this a joke? I'm not sure what this is. Yeah. So I feel like that area should be personal.
Yeah, but that train left the station quite a few years ago. The idea that you could maintain, Colin Powell, I think, would attest that you actually can't maintain integrity and security and privacy.
Right, right.
Although, I mean, it does. Now, do you take any particular steps? Do you use a virtual private network or do you use Tor encryption?
Well, let's just say I've got some great people in the State Department who've been helping me out. Some freelancers with my email. No, of course not.
No, I mean, of course. No, I use a VPN all the time. Yeah. I mean, I never send or receive or browse anything without a VPN, even on my own.
Wow.
Do that. Why do you do that? Just you're technologically savvy enough to know that somebody at any point can be looking in on your stuff.
I was paying attention to that Edward Snowden guy. He said they were spying on everybody in the United States. He said that a few years ago. I was actually paying attention. I don't really like the idea. And apparently, you know, it is possible if you are sufficiently paranoid to keep certain stuff private.
And that's VPN, the idea
VPNs
of being able to secure it.
Tor and encryption and all that stuff. It is,
but beyond that,
that,
because that, you're right. You're absolutely right that technology will betray you. But conceptually, when it comes to the government saying that your Gmail, because you work for the city of Chicago or you work for the Chicago Police Department, is fair game for them to look at, I don't know. I feel like that we've been having that same discussion when it comes to corporate America and the idea of what actually your employers can own and what they can't. I mean, saying it's your computer that you bought and it's your Gmail that you set up for, I just don't know how that should be in the public sphere in any form.
Now, there is connecting tissue, though, because I was just thinking while you were talking there about it's probably apocryphal, but I was always told that Mayor Richard M. Daley said never put into an email something that you don't want to see on the front page of the Tribune tomorrow morning. And
guess who's learning that? Robin.
Yeah, right. That would be savvy advice. But the problem is, what happens if you have a job for one of those city agencies and you use your private phone to send an email to that?
Absolutely.
Once it goes into that, it is public. I mean, if I'm working for the city, as I once did, any email that I generate is a public document. I think we all accept that.
I was just going to say what happened or what we see with Hillary Clinton, and obviously there's bigger issues at play when it comes to what these emails are actually saying. But this conversation we're having right now, just as you said, Aaron, I mean, they're pretty savvy to the fact that they need to protect their stuff and keep it separate, and they don't want people looking at it because the fact of the matter is the world can look at it. So it does make sense to why the leaders of our country may do email differently than you and me.
Well, although the leaders of our country are not able to protect and secure their emails. The NSA was just hacked 2 weeks ago. The State Department was hacked while Hillary Clinton was there. The DNC has been hacked most recently. I mean, in my view, there is one pimply-faced, overweight 17-year-old girl in a basement in Latvia who is running the world. And she's moving the market. She's doing everything.
Did you have to say overweight?
Because she's living in her parents' basement because she can't.
She doesn't leave. She's got to check the markets.
She's unpopular. Nobody likes her.
She eats at her desk. She's sitting in the basement.
She's sitting in the basement because she's a social outcast and she's ruling the world.
Mom comes down and brings her a slice of pizza.
A slice of pizza. Aaron Freeman, Ken Davis. It's a week in review here on the download. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break, get an update on tonight's news. Stay with us. Thank you, Rob. It's download here on WGN Radio. Martyr having some computer problems up there. I don't know what's going on.
We're all good now. We're all good. It's coming back.
We're online now.
Oh, good.
It's coming through now, Con. That's my Star Trek 2.
That's his teleprompter 3. Messed up.
Ken Davis in studio, the host of Chicago Newsroom on CAN TV. You can find it. They air it all the time. What's the best way to find? Is it go straight to the website?
ChicagoNewsroom.org.
Yeah. But it also airs throughout the weekend and the week.
On CAN TV, on CAN Channel TV. 19, if you're in Chicago. And it's complicated, but yes.
And of course,
is it available online 24/7.
24/7.
And Aaron Freeman, longtime commentator, comedian, artist in residence for the Chicago Council on Science and Technology. You can follow him on Twitter, Excitable Ape, or on his YouTube channel, neurosciencecomedy.com. All right.
Yes.
Let's get to the rabbit hole story.
Can I hijack for just one quick second?
Of course.
We were talking before we took the break about the thing about email and privacy and all that stuff. I don't know if you guys saw the picture today of the cows with the blurred faces. Did you see that?
No.
Google Earth. Somebody found a picture of like where the car was driving by and there were a couple of cows standing in a pasture somewhere. And the bot has blurred out their faces.
Okay.
Which...
Because that's what you're supposed to do.
Because
in
all,
Google Earth,
all faces
right,
on Google
right.
Earth are,
so the
are
cows
blurred.
Are blurred out.
Right. Which led... led Wired magazine to do a piece this afternoon on the whole thing that we're talking about, machine learning, and how eerie and cool at the same time this thing is. They've got machine learning machines figuring out how to depixelate pictures, and it's working. The four or five different softwares that are used to pixelate pictures, they've now been able to teach machines to literally like take each pixel apart and put the one in that was there before.
So the uncensored.
Uncensored.
So anyone, for police who redact.
Right. So you want to talk about something chilling? Just imagine a year from now, there's software out there that would allow you to unpixelate all those pictures.
That's
just
what you're worried about with machine learning?
That the cow's identities will be revealed.
Have you seen the video they showed with the little reindeers, the robot reindeers, and around Christmas time where like the MIT has made like robot reindeers, and like that could kill me.
Tell me
that's gonna kill me.
Tell me you can't think of a picture right now that you would really prefer not to have unpixelated.
although you know what section are we on now?
We're coming up a rabbit hole.
This is my
I was gonna say that my pick for that which we will be talking about in many years is that this week, actually yesterday, it was announced that for the first time a computer had been able to read an MRI better than doctors.
They
could tell because when people have a radiation therapy on radiation.
Now that's what we want from machines. Yes. Right? Yeah. That's a positive machine
that's
story.
That's right. And so there's the machine can tell a difference on looking at a radiogram for the difference between damage caused by radiation and a return of cancer. Wow. And the machine can do it twice as good as human doctors. Twice as well. Thank you very much. You are correct. Public Radio Board of Education. Thank you very much.
I like twice as good.
He's right. But that
right,
is
that
nice,
is interesting to say. Yeah. So nice. What do you got for rabbit hole, Aaron? What do you got for
Pokemon Go? Pokemon Go. I'm telling you, I'm up to level 24. I have not only Pokemon Go has taught me all manner of fantastic things about my community. What are you laughing? Yes, absolutely. I mean, you just now because of Pokemon Go.
Right. You told me.
I just saw that on the side of this very building is what is claimed to be a piece of the World Trade Center, and that was the Pokestop. So I had to go to that little place, but I found I met my first Highland Park homeless person because of Pokemon Go. She was sleeping on a bench.
She was a Pokestop?
She was sleeping on a bench.
On the bench
that
was a Pokestop. Good. I was going to say that might cross the line. She was the stop. Right.
No, that would not be cool.
That would not be cool.
They would blur her out on Google Map, on Google Earth. But it was really very interesting. And I had talked. It was actually fairly annoying because I was talking to her, and we chatted her up, and I came home and I told my wife, hey, I talked to a homeless person. And I felt like so elevated, so much beyond these other Highland Parkers. I has spoken to a homeless person. Mm. Okay, this is where I live, okay? It's a bubble. It's a bubble, all right? Where I come from, poor people have only one Tesla. Well, I mean, this is I'm not saying this is real life. This has no connection to reality. This is Highland Park, Illinois, okay? But
welcome to Michigan Avenue, too.
Yeah, right? All right, what do you got, Ken?
I thought, well, you see, I hate to do this, but it's another Trump thing. I mean, I saw that you were asking about rabbit holes, I have to confess to you that I have spent the entire week, every unscheduled moment of my life, checking up on the latest numbers to see if it's true that Trump actually could win this thing. And he can. And there are all these maps that have been like coming out today where Hillary Clinton has she's got lots more popular vote than Trump, but it's not useful because, for example, she might win.
She's gonna landslide here.
5 or 10
Illinois, right?
Million Hispanic votes, but it doesn't matter because they're all in Illinois and California and New York, which she's gonna win anyway. So Trump actually has a pathway to 275.
Do you believe, as a political observer, that Donald Trump knows this from 5 years ago when he decided he's going to run, and that's why he doesn't care about courting those votes, because he knows that they're not the ones that he needs to win the presidency.
If I thought he was that smart and that clever, I would be less worried about what happens on January 21st when I wake up and have to call him President Trump.
But maybe Republican strategists and people mm-hmm. who have created the blueprint for how you win may know that, and Trump is just the sort of ego of that.
And you know, Slate has this thing called Trumpocalypse Watch. Every day they have the four horsemen, how many horsemen there are. And all through the whole election, it's been at one half a horseman. And the other day it was at 3.5 horsemen.
Oh, it's moving on.
Yeah. So
mine is election related as well. It's Hillary Clinton and a pneumonia story, which really to me was also the biggest story of the week since it started at the beginning of this week.
Yeah.
But I made the mistake and the rabbit hole mistake of really clicking through. I clicked like 3 times I shouldn't have, to the point where I was like, there are theories, there are conspiracy theories that Hillary Clinton is dead, and that she is, it is a bunch of doubles, like body doubles, impersonators, that this is so important for the Democratic Party for her to win, because then they can give it to Tim Kaine, you know, that kind of thing, they're just going to sort of fake it. Now, obviously, she's on the stage today. That the conspiracy theories are dead because unless it's not her.
It's obviously.
But, you know, they faked the
loon. They went crazy, though, Aaron. They went to the point where she went to Chelsea Clinton's apartment. Why did she go without the Secret Service? Why wasn't the Secret Service in the shot? When she came back, her fingers were longer than the fingers of the person who was at the 9/11 remembrance. Yep. Her hairstyle was different. Her face was different. Her glasses were different.
Those things in her ears?
Yeah, everything. They didn't let her get too close to the media. There was a reporter that was supposed to be with her on the whole day, and they wouldn't let her near. There was a lot that went in. If you go on Twitter, and don't, but if you do, you can see like this. And obviously it's being undone by the fact that she's well and she's back on the campaign trail.
Well, you don't know that.
I don't know that. That's
the nature of conspiracy.
The idea that the body double is just stupid. I mean, it's obviously a droid. Obviously it's a droid. Anybody can tell that. I mean, you just look at the motions. They're not real natural motions.
It's the MIT Rangers.
Absolutely.
They went up,
Boston Dynamics. Everybody
knows
that.
Come to think of it, you're right, because she's only about like level 3.2.
Exactly right.
She needs a couple more updates.
They brought her out
software
there.
Updates.
She had that little walk out to test out the droid. It didn't look quite like a human motion.
They put her in the van real quick.
Put a van. They're right. Making the
plug
last
her back
minute.
In.
And it's the Russian hackers who are doing the programming. The Russians are programming the whole little thing. You have no idea how deep it goes. Okay?
That's what I have to say. Also, I the other thing I have just in week in review.
You're laughing, but wait till you find out it's true.
That's right.
True. We broke it here first.
Yeah.
The Russian involvement is the other one too. Just kind of going down the rabbit hole with Russian tinkering with the election. Are we back in the 80s? Like, it feels like it's like red heat with Arnold Schwarzenegger, like all over again. We're bringing the Russians back.
Speaking of the Olympics, it is interesting that they did leak a bunch of data, personal data about U.S. Olympians after Russia had been, Russian athletes had been banned.
I actually buy that story.
Right.
I buy that. I feel like there might be something there. I saw little kernels as a journalist and an observer of, wait a second. So, you know, with Peyton Manning kind of got cleared on all the PED stuff, the other football players got cleared. I mean, are we getting to the point where doctors and the league and the players, they figured out how to skirt their own systems? Because that's how it felt like with the Olympic, like Simone Biles and the Serena Williams and Venus.
A medical exemption.
The doctor said it's okay.
Right.
You know, so then it's okay. And you're like, wait a second. And then the same thing. I mean, that's now we're getting to, well, they have asthma. You know, they have asthma, so they have to take the steroid that makes their muscles real big. You know, essentially what, and you get to a point where you're like, oh, it's not really about if they're doping, it's how they're hiding the doping. And that's where I feel like we're starting to get to.
We're on the doping spectrum.
Yes.
The doping spectrum is very slippery, very fuzzy.
All right, we'll come back. We'll do our final segment. Which story will be remembered in 50, 100, 500 years from now? Ken Davis, Aaron Freeman in studio. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Ken Davis and Aaron Freeman in studio with me. We're reloading this week's news. All right, we got one category left, my favorite category. Which story will be remembered from this week in 50 years? 5 years, 50 years, 500, whatever, man. Just the idea that they're going to pull a rock back when this planet gets resodded. And they'll be like, oh, what's this time capsule? Oh, what happened in September of 2016? All right, we heard Aaron's, which was a good one about computers and the idea of being able to read MRIs better than doctors. What do you got, Ken?
I think this one's a no-brainer because it's both national, global, and Chicago-based at the same time.
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't that talk about overselling,
triple,
right?
Triple threat.
Where was it? In San Francisco? Or I forget where it was, but somewhere this week. The first of the Uber driverless cabs were unleashed on the world.
Yep.
And that is something that 50 years from now, that will look like the Wright brothers, flying off Kitty Hawk, right? But the real story is the Chicago story, because what this means is that we're getting to a point where we're no longer going to really need cars, because the Uber will just come and pick us up wherever we're going. And that is going to seriously affect the Chicago parking meter deal.
Yeah, great point.
Good point.
Luckily, so maybe Mayor Daley was right.
Right.
Maybe there'll be no income.
But remember, remember what the parking meter deal is, right? You gotta make sure they have a certain amount.
If you don't make the pay, we pay in, right?
Around that time, we'll finally have put the pension thing to bed, and then we'll be paying them because of Uber cars.
Oh, we didn't even think about that. I do think that's fascinating. And there was a great Time magazine story or headline. It wasn't this week or the week before. Maybe the idea: Are you willing to get rid of accidents, tragedies, any sort of insurance payment, cars, if you give up the right to drive? The right. That's what the headline was. The headline was no accidents, no this, that.
Right.
All you got to do is give up the right. Will you do it, America? And America's like, no, I ain't giving up no rights.
But I will say that I think Second Amendment. Most people I know would rather text than drive. I would definitely I would rather play Pokemon Go than drive. There's virtually everything. I mean, I'd rather listen to the radio. I'd rather pay attention to the radio. Surf the
radio?
Dial.
If you could split the idea that drive, like for me, I don't, the option is to drive or take public transportation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But if the option was to drive or have somebody else drive me,
mm-hmm.
I would take the someone else drive
Absolutely.
Me, right? I mean, that's not even a, that's a no-brainer in there.
Well, regard. I mean, if you want to get quasi-serious about this for a minute, it has such implications for everything because we spend billions of dollars on public transportation. I'm a big transit geek. You know, it's like, look at all the money we're putting into the Red Line right now, buying thousands of new L cars. Maybe in 50 years, we won't need any of them.
The question, and this is always the question when it comes to anything that's new technology, is how long will it take for there to be a haves and have-nots scenario?
Right.
Will it only
right.
be the people that are in the 1% or people who make a certain amount of money will be able to afford this technology?
It
and everybody
could
else will
be
like, hey, man, figure it out, walk.
It
you know,
could
like, I mean, are you gonna, I mean, what's going to happen there?
It could be one of the great democratizers, though,
true,
just kind
true.
Of like what smartphones have done,
yep.
right?
That's
right.
True.
I mean, everybody's got a smartphone. You
right.
don't even, you know, you can be poor.
Although
and have a smartphone.
I will say the one thing out of this week, the iPhone 7, it was so jacked up about the iPhone 7, and that's fine, and there are still lines around the corner here at the Apple store. They want at base price $650.
Yeah, plus $200 for the wireless headphones.
And not to mention with the carrier. I mean, you're walking out of a store at a $1,000 investment
yeah,
in your
yeah,
phone,
yeah.
a phone that lasts, as we know as Apple users, 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so that to me is a problem. That's a problem that I think right now that I don't think you have to get to regulation yet and that kind of thing, but you get to a point where, you know, I feel like the technology companies are running away with costs and making things much more expensive when it's becoming so utilitarian, like it's so utility, the mm-hmm. fact that we have to have one of these to survive.
Well, this is one of those 50 years from now things. We'll look back
right.
on it and say, oh, 2016, that was the year that Apple dropped the headphone jack.
Yeah, right. That might be, that's a great
it's
one.
True.
Mine is obviously the Cubs because I feel like
yep,
they're going to win
absolutely.
The World Series, so there will be a look back.
They are
to
going
this
to
week.
Win the World Series?
Yes. And I think you're going to look back to this week
and
as
President
a celebration.
President Trump will throw out.
Yeah. Bit, right, exactly. The other one that I think is really interesting, and it has ramifications. For obesity and for health is the weird story about the sugar lobby from 50 years
oh,
ago.
Oh, yes.
I thought that was
yes.
really interesting
blaming
that blaming it on fat because
yeah.
50 years has gone by where we thought fat was the worst thing in the world.
Right.
So what if in 50 years we think sugar is the worst thing in the world? Will that change the way we look at sweets, the way we look at cola, the way we look at all the things that right now we can't live without? Will we be in a position where that stuff will be eliminated in our society, and what will that do for the race, the human race as
sort of like imagine 50 years from now people looking back on saying, can you believe that they actually ate cows?
Ah, that's
you
know?
Can,
true.
You, can you imagine
it's
that
true.
Just like they ate cows and pigs?
Yep.
Oh,
that's so true,
true.
Man,
yeah.
That's so true. Ken Davis, he's the host of Chicago Newsroom. You can find us at chicagonewsroom.com. is it .com? ChicagoNewsroom.com?
.org.
ChicagoNewsroom.org. Aaron Freeman,
thanks
of course, comedian and commentator. He's also the artist in residence for the Chicago Council on Science and Technology. Follow him at Excitable Ape on Twitter and his YouTube channel, NeuroscienceComedy.com. You guys, it was a pleasure to
see
you.
Thank
fun.
You so much.
Thanks
yeah,
for being
thank
here.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 10 tonight. So wrapping up here. Coming up, Preps Plus Chicago with Sam Panionovich, Kevin Powell. Give you all the updates on high school football all around the state of Illinois. Big games tonight. Always a good show. We'll give you all the updates. I love that show because it's the best of giving you information and also crowdsourcing. The texts start coming in. The calls start coming in, giving them scores, which is great. That was a fun segment. The Week in Review was fun. I love Aaron Freeman, Ken Davis, both those guys. Aaron Freeman and I worked together for years. I used to produce a radio show he did back in 1996.
Wow.
20 years ago. We didn't even talk about it. That's hard to believe. He looks great. 20 years ago. That's, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't believe I got a job producing a show when I was 8.
Yeah, I love those guys.
Yeah, and I mean it's always great. I mean, he's just such a smart, cerebral guy, especially when it comes to technology and its impact. I mean, it's the idea of talking about the idea of computers being able to read MRIs. The one thing I love about Aaron, he's so positive. Like you saw it in me and Ken, we're like, end of days, and he's like, no, here's something that's great. The idea that, and that is true. I mean, and any doctor will tell you there is a specific issue when it comes to being able to read MRIs to see if, you know, blemishes are cancer or if they're effects of radiation, especially when people are going in after chemotherapy. So that's a tremendous, tremendous story. Also, the driverless cars. Would you do a driverless car? Would you give up the right, Pete, to drive if you didn't have to worry about accidents or insurance or money and things of that nature?
Parking? Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would. I got a great car story. I have a Honda CR-V, right? It's getting up there in age. I'm getting to the point where I'm like, you know, because it's at the 10-year, it's 11 years old now.
I know. That's why I told you last night you should have drove it up to Clark. Hopefully it would get turned over outside Sluggers.
You
get,
yeah,
get a brand new car.
Right. Well, there's still the playoffs.
Yeah. We got time.
I love the car. It's also one. I'm a city guy with a car, and I don't drive it that much. Meaning, you know, I'll just drive it from here to there. Most of the time here, I'll take public transportation. So to be fair, I mean, it has less than 100,000 miles at 11 years. I mean, that's great. It should be way over that. And it's a good car. It has a couple little.
You drive it like an elderly woman.
I do. Yeah. Not very. Just to get some milk. Right. But there, you know, it's like any old car. The problem what I thought in my head as a savvy financier is, well, there's not a lot of miles on it, so it's going to last longer. But like any car, you get to like 11 years and little things, it's just like the iPhone. Things break that you're like, that shouldn't have broke, but it's 11 years.
A nickel and dime. Yeah.
Today, this is awesome. I'm such an idiot, and I'm like Larry David a lot of the times. And you know, this goes along with my broken shoes and things like that. I pulled up at the at a stoplight on Grand, and right next to me was a guy with the exact same car, same make, same model, same color, everything. So you know, you like the Larry David bit, you give
the
nod.
The Prius,
right?
Yeah,
you give the nod. This guy was not necessarily someone that you would usually give a nod to. He was a gentleman, maybe I would say a Hispanic gentleman, hat to the side, a little bit more street. Then you would, you know, I don't know what he does. He's probably a billionaire, you know.
Yeah.
But the point being, he was not the kind of guy that I would usually be like, hey, buddy.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So I looked at him. He's looking at me. And I'm like, okay. So I look away. I look back. He's looking at me again. And I'm, you know, I'm going to ask this guy a question. So I rolled down the window on the passenger. Hey, buddy, nice car. He's like, thank you. I don't even know if he speaks English, right? And I go, what year is that? He's like, 2005. I'm like, okay, that's what I got too. Do you have problems with the electric? You know, with the headlights? Like, I feel like the headlights go out way too much. They get out way more than a regular car. He's like, what? And I'm like, no, it just seems like that. And the dashboard light, it just seems like that. He's like, it's a fuse problem, man. As he says, it's a fuse problem. It's not the car. It's a fuse problem. I'm like, no, I understand, but it just seems like the make. And I just want to see, what do you have? What are your problems? Is the lights green? What are your problems with the car? And we both start to move. And
still
we're still talking. Like, we have just commanded Grand Avenue. I'm like, well, okay, well, I'll check and see if it's a fuse, but I've already looked into the fuse. It's not, I feel like I'm spending a lot of money. He's like, no, check it. It's not the engine light, man. And then he just said, hey, it's a good car. And he went right, and I went straight. And I was like, that's good, man. That's it. You know what? We have a kindred spirit, the two of us, owning our Honda CR-V. I think at the end he said, Honda, good car. I was like, yeah, I know. But I want to know about the headlights. And it's just so oblivious to probably blocking a ton of people's traffic. And at the same time, breaking all sort of social stereotypes to talk to anybody in traffic in Chicago on a side street about my headlights. Can I ask you something? So, Larry David. Pretty. There's not my finest moment, but it turned out well. You know, I could see that going bad, but at the same time, how? So. This is where we need to fake a montage. He goes right, he goes left, double side, like, yeah, touchdown! We gonna stop him in! Like that kind of thing.
At the 40! At the 35! He's at the 30!
His shirt's off. He's drunk. He has a red hat on. Did you hear the Kevin Harlan call last week? One of the greatest calls in the history of sports.
That was fantastic.
He's at the 40. He's drunk.
The best part about it is when Kurt Warner is the commentator with Kevin Harlan. Kevin Harlan's like, he finishes the call, and Kurt Warner says, that was a great call, man.
He just casually drops it in. Great call, man. Great call.
What I was upset about more than anything was that the drunkard – did not follow the – Harlan did all that great work. All he had to do was 5 more yards into the end right. zone, and well, he would have had the call. But he turns it around and turns it back the other way.
In all, seriousness, though, like, I respect Harlan for having the awareness to just go right into it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, As opposed to the old guard.
Be like, oh, my God, what's happening? Yeah.
But the TV,
turn your eyes away.
TV won't do it.
TV didn't even show the guy. They don't want to give him any credit or give anybody the fame, because if somebody's going to be on TV, then some other idiot thinks, oh, I'll do that one day. So if you notice in the clip, Deadspin synced it up radio to television.
Yeah. Oh, did they? Perfect.
The TV broadcast is like showing Jeff Fisher chomping on gum. You don't see the guy on the field.
And the best shots were the shots of people in the stands putting it on Instagram, things like that.
Right.
All right, Sam Panionovich, Kevin Powell, it is time for Preps Plus Chicago. Big night in high school football all around the state of Illinois. We're getting into the thick of it. It's hard to believe that we're already in September. What is this, week 5 now?
Four.
We're almost 50% through.
All right, I'm flying
season.
Too fast. I'm too close to the
sun. You pay attention. I mean, you know, that's no big deal. It's a big week, though.
So
conference play is picking up.
Okay,
right,
okay.
Well, for some schools it is. The biggest game probably today, Lincoln Way East at Bolingbrook. Two teams with lots of history. The Battle of St. Charles, North against East. 17 of the top 20 in action tonight. Number one and number two actually off. They both play tomorrow. But we have the head coach of number one Loyola, John Holasek. He's going to join us at 10:20.
Awesome.
Yeah, and they won a state title last year. They're number one this year. I think the count is 17 wins in a row for Loyola. So he's going to come on and talk a little private versus public. I don't know if you've heard about this. Kevin and I have been talking about it. Mm-hmm. We previewed it sort of last year. There might be a split in the playoffs eventually, maybe next year or the year after, where they split it public and private.
Like they do in basketball.
No, they don't do that in basketball? No, it's a class system. It's a class system. Everybody's independent.
I thought the Chicago teams played each other, and then they went downstate, and that's why they always lost.
But isn't at the end of the year, is there some sort of public league? Sam would know.
That's a prep bowl. The private against the public. The schools in Chicago, that's the best public team and the best private team. Anyway, so
enough guessing by Justin and I.
Excuse my ignorance.
Again, we're sorry for exposing you. So now everybody is lumped in based on the amount of students that go there. And, of course, Catholic schools have multipliers. If you don't have girls, it's another multiplier. So it's 1 through 8A. Now they're talking that the public echoes are so strong that they don't want to play the big bad private schools because they recruit. So there may be a split, and in a couple of years we may have a private bracket and then a public bracket, and then they have the decision to go from there.
Is that – I mean, that's heating up. And when you talk about private and public, I guess I always think of – I guess I'm talking about city schools, like the idea that you're talking about – are you talking about public being any school that's public? Or are you talking about private
through the state?
Any public school in Illinois.
So yeah, not CPS.
Yeah.
Not
just CPS. That's where I'm making a mistake.
Not just Chicago public. All public high schools would have their own little faction. And then all the private schools, if you have to pay money to attend school in high school, that clarifies as a private school.
Because you're right. That does make sense, because you see in private schools, they are able to recruit. They're able to get and give free tuition to great players who would be able to come into that private school. So there is an advantage. They're almost like a college in that way.
Well, we'll ask Holasek about this too. See, there's this perception that, you know, the private schools get all the kids because they can recruit. Look, they're recruiting against each other.
Right.
Right. Like Loyola and Carmel and Brother Rice and St. Rita and St. Pat's, they're all trying to go for the same kids. So there's competition there. And not to mention, you know, these schools raise all the money on their own. They're not getting government money. They're not getting your money. Public schools, they're going to have 90 guys try it out no matter what. And they're going to have brand new facilities and equipment because it's public school. You get the taxpayer money. So, you know, if you have a good job at a private school, you keep it, you hold on to it, like Frank Lenti at Carmel, Holasek at Loyola.
I think you could even look at just, I mean, this goes even to the college level. If you're a winning program over and over, more kids are going to want to play for winning programs.
Right.
That's sort of the dumbed down thought of it. But you look at the top 20, these are teams you see every year. I mean, Loyola, Glenbard West, Brother Rice, Lincoln Way East, Mount Carmel, Neuqua Valley. Those teams are always going to be in the top 20 in the conversation because of, yes, the thing Sam just said, but also if you win, you win. And more kids, if any team, doesn't matter who it is, whether it's a powerhouse or not, if they have a fluke year, then next year I guarantee their participation rate, the kids that show up the first day of practice, is probably going to double. You know what I mean?
So do they have recruiting issues? Not issues, but do they recruit in public, like in public schools? I mean, you see CPS schools in particular where they're like, hey, we're at Julian High School or whatever, you know. They got a good kid who's going to come live in the neighborhood.
No, that's all plotted out based on where you live. Everything is districted.
But that's what they said with Kevin Garnett, who went to Farragut.
Well, Farragut.
And I went live with my aunt.
Well,
that's in the
right, because he used a family member's address, right. And by the time, well, because Garnett transferred here from South Carolina. People think because he played at Farragut, he's from Chicago. No, he's from South Carolina.
He played his final year, his senior year.
He played
year
his senior
Farragut.
Year. So by the time the IHSA, by the time they got around to it, they're like, oh wow, he doesn't actually live there. It's March, the season's over,
he's going
to the NBA. So right, it doesn't matter. I mean, you ignore that until you have to talk about right. it.
Well, I mean, obviously you guys are going to have an hour with our high school football coming up.
Yeah.
Let's talk professional sports for just a second. Both of you involved in the Chicago Cubs clinch coverage.
Yeah,
today.
We had a huge thing to do with it. We're the reason they won 94 games already.
I said coverage. Sam Fanjanovic was there today. Kev was there yesterday. Sam, talk about today. I mean, celebration. The big question I have is, did they use the celebration room?
No, they didn't, because the party room has been bypassed. Now you do it in the clubhouse. When you get to champagne games...
Just disrespectful to the party room, in my opinion. I mean, it was there all year for them, just waiting for them to be destroyed, and then they go and leave it on the biggest day? Come on.
So they had the tarped-off clubhouse with the plastic tarp the walls, and everything's lined up, and there's, like, you know, garbage bags over all the cool stuff, and the TVs are covered. But they just huddled around that clubhouse, and it's 30,000 square feet. A lot of room there, and there were just buckets. They were like, all right, so if you look at a clock, 12, 3, 6, and 9 – there was a like a booze stanchion at all of those posts.
Well, we were watching. We were getting coverage live from Sam, but we were, you know, we have TVs in here just to follow the news and stuff. So we had everybody on, and we had cameras in there. And if you look closely at one of the highlights, you can see Sam stuffing champagne bottles down his pants.
Yes.
So if you go to the newsroom right now, yeah. Rob and Roger Badish are up there.
Yeah.
We were just popping some bottles up there straight from
That's
Wrigley.
Right.
Look,
well
That's
done
right.
by Sam.
Yeah, and people kept texting me, see you on TV. I'm like, yeah, great. Yeah,
and in 25 years. You guys will be calling in to swap meet going, I've got a bottle of champagne unopened from the 2016 right. clincher. How much is that worth?
You see this razor blade? Yeah. I stole this out of the Cub clubhouse in 2016.
So exciting day. They obviously had, I mean, do you see, are they playing tomorrow? I mean, are the starters
well,
back?
Well, yeah, they have a game tomorrow.
But I mean, are the starters back? Are they going to do the same thing where the secondary
guys I think the rest of the way, I mean, I think it's going to be a very calculated type thing. Sam, I don't know what your thoughts are about. I think, look, Joe Maddon is the probably the best. He's 1A and 1B for me and him and Bruce Bochy in San Francisco. He knows what he's doing. This is going to be a very calculated thing of keeping these guys focused, keeping them on the field a
right.
certain amount of times,
right.
but also giving them the amount of rest.
A little breaks.
I think it's sort of a sensitive area. I think for the veteran guys, Lackey, even Arrieta at this point, Lester, you know, and they've gone to the six-man rotation. Those guys, I think, understand it are fine. Some of the younger guys, you know, you want to keep them out there to make sure they aren't losing focus
right.
or anything like that. So
you got
to
keep LaStella focused.
But you know what's funny?
God forbid he quits and runs home to New Jersey.
Yeah. But you know, you look at the lineup he sent out today, and I'm looking through it. I'm like,
it's a 4A lineup. It's not AAA, and it's not the Cubs. It's like in
right.
the middle.
I'm like, I think I would take this lineup over the White Sox lineup right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, you actually would.
It's like, you got Javi Baez. You got Coughlin can hit a little bit.
I will say this about the White Sox. The one thing, and we'll wrap and get you guys the Preps Plus Chicago. But
we could be late.
I think it's hilarious that the only time we really watch the White Sox right now is Chris Sale. And it's like Robin Ventura knows it. He throws Chris Sale. It don't matter pitch counts. Doesn't matter anything. You'll see a Bumgarner. You'll see a Kershaw. They're all limited in their
which
fit
is
form.
Just
Sale's
so
in the eighth inning with a with a high pitch count with the
which
run
is
totals.
So
no
dumb
bullpen.
Because if you're a Sox fan, you're crossing
it's
your
hard.
Fingers that everyone stays healthy for the winter meetings when they arrive, and that some of these guys are dealt.
But I also feel as a baseball fan, and I understand baseball that you know the idea of the fourth or fifth time through a rotation if you're a Kansas City Royals lineup. You kind of got Chris Sale figured out. And you see Chris Sale be in these positions where he loses by a run or, you know, it's close. And he goes deep in the games, and it always seems to kind of implode on him towards the end. He's winning right now 6-4 in the eighth. So
well,
that's good,
here, I have one final thought. And, Pete, you'll appreciate this. You'll love this one. So this week the Cubs were planning out their clincher party, right? Mm-hmm. When will we have the champagne? What are they going to do? How much booze do we need? This week, the White Sox, what did they do this week?
Yeah, I know.
They broke a Guinness World Record for dogs at a ballpark, then they announced the schedule for Sox Fest. Woo!
Yay.
There's the contrast between the north side and the south side right now.
Really quickly, if you look through the highlights of the White Sox season, it's a kid.
It's a bunch of dogs running around.
One of the players causing his dad to basically leave the team.
Wow. John Danks.
You have John Danks imploding. James Shields imploding. You have Chris Sale cutting up jerseys with scissors. And you have the Guinness World Record of most dogs at a sporting event,
baby.
That's a season to remember. The 2016 White Sox.
Baby.
Hey, Robbie, the Glenbrook South lost, by the way. I'll just get to it right off the bat.
Justin's trying to go to break. He's like, we got to go.
It's all good. It's all good. Sam Panionovich, Kevin Powell, they're coming up next with Preps Plus Chicago. Stay with us. All right. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. We'll be back on Monday.